Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, monthly from September through May. uwsuper.edu/cce.
This is Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Najoe. Thanks for listening. Matt Kostelnik is back with us today. He's the technical manager at Ambius and has over 20 years of combined experience in the horticulture industry, as well as in teaching horticulture at the university level. Do you need help with your indoor plants? Well, join in with your comments and questions by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
It's always here to talk about plants.
Yes, it's always fun, especially when it's been so dark and dreary out. Those indoor plants kind of save us, don't they?
Yes, they do. They do. And it's nice that they're year-round. And these are the type of plants that we can actually enjoy in the coldest time of the year. So it's one of the things I love about houseplants.
Yeah. And you know, besides making, you know, like you said, making it look good inside, are there other benefits that indoor plants can give us?
Yeah, there's lots of benefits. I think the most profound benefits of plants indoors is the impact they have on us as people. I was just watering some plants right now, as a matter of fact, and we're heading into the coldest time of the year and, you know, going to get as far away from gardening outside as you can possibly get. So being able to work with plants or just have plants around when, you know, everything outside is dormant and there's nothing going on really out there has a lot of great psychological benefits to people. So that is the biggest impact. I would say some of the other impacts that go along with it, there's obviously decorative purposes, you know, ornamental, they have ornamental appeal. And also if you have a large number of plants in an area inside, it will raise the humidity. And it's not just the plants alone that raise the humidity, but when you water the soil, water is evaporating. So if you think about the amount of water that you put on plants, whether the plants have used that water, or it's evaporated from the soil or wherever, that's all increased humidity. And air is very dry in the wintertime in the Midwest, so you can get an impact there. They also can clean the air, but it does take a large number of plants to actually truly clean the indoor air. Truth be told, you know, just letting in fresh air from the outside has a bigger impact on that because there's far more plants outside and growing much faster. So those are some of the main benefits.
Okay, that makes sense. So obviously the biggest change that our house plants as well as us is experiencing is the lack of light. Now, what are some of our options for providing enough for those house plants?
The best option is to use what's already there, which is natural light. So anywhere that you do have a window is always going to help. And in the wintertime, you know, the late fall and winter, south windows in particular are great. In fact, you probably actually might be getting more light in those south windows in the wintertime. I have an orchid that's in a south window. And because the sun is in the southern horizon, it's really beaming right in through that southern window. And I've had that orchid for, I don't know, 5 years now. And it just loves it, and it gets bigger and bigger, and it's blooming. And I credit all of that, most of that, to the light more than anything else. So use whatever natural light you can get. If you don't have natural light, then the second option I would use is take advantage of any light that you already have inside. So if you have, you know, fluorescent lighting I'm looking above right now, you know, plants go under a location like that, great. And if that doesn't work, if you have no light whatsoever, then you can always add artificial light. You can add, you can use grow lights or just use any type of light, and that will definitely help those plants out a lot. So those are some options right there. And I'd say one other thing, if you don't have enough light or you're not able to, then resort to lower light plants.
That's always a good option. And they're usually a little less picky, touchy. At least that's the experience I've had. So when you're talking about bringing in some extra light, are there specific bulbs that you need to be looking for, or will any do?
The short answer is any will do. As long as you're adding extra light to that plant, it's going to like it. There's a number of things you can look at with light to figure out if it's the right bulb or intensity. There's a couple things you can look at with light. One is the color. And plants, there's three basic colors. There's red and blue and green. And plants use a lot of red and quite a bit of blue, but they also do use some green. And when you combine all three of those together, you get white. And so if the color of the lamp looks white, then that's fine. You're getting all of those colors. If, you know, some of the grow lights may look more of a pinkish color or purplish color. And what that means is they have mostly red and blue light, but they've not really put in the green light because you don't quite get as much bang for your buck for the green light. So if you do see those type of bulbs, they certainly work. They're really good. They do look kind of strange, though. But if you only have them on at night, then, you know, that's fine. But any type of light, really, that you can get is great. And also one thing to add is try not to have it too intense. Sometimes, you know, the light from the plant, if it's too much for the plant will absorb the light. And what it doesn't use a lot of times just turns to heat. And then that heat can start to burn the plant. So that's something to keep in mind. In fact, if you can feel your plant and it does feel warm to the touch, then it is actually getting too hot from that light source.
Well, that's really some good advice. Now, you said about keeping the lights on at night. Are there any plants that really do need the dark, though, that they won't do well if they don't get it?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. This time of the year, the nights are really long. So you will get a bigger impact off of that. But most plants appreciate having lights off at night. If you think about it, people like about, you know, roughly 8 hours of sleep. And plants, too, appreciate that break. There are a lot of plants where you can keep them on 24 hours and it's not an impact. It won't impact them. But there are some plants in the Crassula family, like the jade plant, where they actually do require a dark period. And if they don't get that dark period, then they will eventually die as a result of that. There are other plants that will only bloom when based upon how many hours of darkness they've gotten. So poinsettias, as an example, the reason why we see poinsettias this time of the year and not in the summertime is that they do like longer nights and shorter days in order to bloom. So that's called photoperiod, and that too can impact plants.
I've noticed that on my Christmas cactus, if I had a reason why there was light on 24/7, it didn't bloom. But as soon as I gave it that dark, it bloomed, no problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones. We've got a couple of callers here. Phyllis, in the town of Dunn, what can we help you with today?
Hi, I have a Monstera plant, which is really big. It's, I don't know, 20 years old or more. And it's just dropping its leaves so much. And, I mean, this always happens in the winter, but it's happening too much. And I don't know, have I overwatered it or underwatered it?
That's a great question. So whenever I look at plant problems, the two big factors I look at more than anything is light and water. So I'm assuming since the plant is in the same location that light's probably not an issue, unless you've moved it. Has it been moved at all?
It's not necessarily true. I mean, I'm realizing right now as I speak, it's one of the ones that's getting less light. I arrange them differently almost every year when I bring them in from their vacation outside.
Okay. So it will appreciate more light, that's for sure. And secondly, in terms of whether you're overwatering or underwatering, that's a big cause of a lot of plant issues right there. The best advice I can give anyone with figuring out if it's overwatered or underwatered is to use what's called a soil probe. And it's typically made out of metal or plastic. And you stick it into the soil and you give it a turn and then it pulls out little plugs of soil. And then you feel those with your fingers to see if it's wet or dry. And that is, I was just watering a bunch of plants right now, and I'm using my soil probe all the time when I do that. Instead of just touching the surface of the soil, sometimes people say, well, just stick your finger in the soil and that'll tell you everything. That will only tell you what the soil moisture is like on the top. There's a good chance that, you know, if you feel the soil and it's dry, it may still be moist or even wet lower down. And that's where that probe is so important. So I highly recommend using that. And then when, you know, I would only water the Monstera when it gets kind of dry or moist dry, and water it thoroughly. You know, don't water it, you know, just a little light top watering, but water it. And if you can see the drainage holes, just to the point where the water just starts to trickle out of the drainage holes. And that's a pretty good rule of thumb for most plants. And if you do that, I think it would really help. And sometimes Monsteras may also need to be pruned once in a while, especially if they're getting too long. So that may also stimulate some new growth and not have as many yellow leaves falling off.
Okay, thank you, Phyllis. Next, we have Arnie in Hancock. Hi, Arnie.
Hi. How are you?
Great. What's your question?
Okay, my question is, I have a couple, they call them lunchbox pepper plants, and they're a small multicolored pepper. They're very good eating, and I've brought them in from out in the garden, and in the last couple of weeks, there seems to be little eggs being laid, and I think they come out of the soil, and somebody told me it might be fungal gnats. It seems to affect the plant quite a bit because the leaves start wilting or turning yellow. I've also used a product by Bondide. I got to think what that's called.
Well,
it's an organic spray, and I don't want to use it when I'm going to be, you know, using it or harvesting the peppers, or if there's a time period and I can't find anything on the labeling, a lot of products will say, you know, you got, you know, a week or two between your spray and harvesting.
Okay. So, Matt, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it sounds like a couple things going on there. The first, it's, I'm glad you mentioned that it's called an interval harvest. So if you are applying a pesticide of some sort, they're required by law to put on that label how long you have to wait before you harvest it. So like you said, it might be 1 or 2 weeks. And that's always important to read on the label. As far as fungus gnats, it's a very common indoor houseplant pest. It might be the most common. They don't really damage the plant, though. They do lay their eggs in the soil. And when you see fungus gnats, they're roughly the size of a mosquito. They'll fly around. A lot of times they'll come out. When you water the soil, they may come out and fly around. But they don't really damage the plant. Sometimes the larva stage of it in the soil may feed on the roots. But if the leaves are turning yellow, to me, it sounds like maybe something else is going on as well. And with fungus gnats, there are, if you're into using natural products, there's actually a lot of natural products to use to control fungus gnats. Biological nematodes are actually very effective on it. And so is BT as well. So there's lots of control methods. And also with fungus gnats, it's important to watch sanitation, because what they like is they like moist organic matter. So if you have lots of organic matter, you have lots of leaves or water or anything like that, it's going to be harder to control fungus gnats. So if you get rid of that and only water the plants when they need it, hopefully you won't have as many fungus gnat issues. If you do, there are some products you can use to get them under control.
Okay. Thanks, Arnie, for that question. We're talking with Matt Kastelnik. He is the technical manager at Ambius and has over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. What questions do you have about your indoor plants? We have open lines. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Clara Neipert is our on-air producer today, and A. Emily Ralph is our technical director. We have an email for you, Mark. Let me read it for you. And it's someone named Mark. he wants to know, is there a basic textbook, like a Horticulture 101 kind of a thing, a PDF or a chart that gives germination requirements, including scarification, stratification, temperature, light for each perennial? He can find information on specific plants, and he's kind of making his own Excel spreadsheet, but he's sure that this work has been done before and that each gardener is not redoing this every year. Can you help him find such information already assembled in one place?
That's interesting. I have to be honest. I don't know of one that has all of that, but I think there's a really good chance that there is something like that out there. Someone else that's listening may have an idea as well. It's just a matter of finding all of that in one location. I think it also, if you're searching for something like that, I would try to figure out, you know, what type of plants you're looking for. If it's perennials, you know, native to Wisconsin, then I would, you know, try to kind of look under that, because what's a perennial in Wisconsin may be different than what's a perennial in Arkansas, as an example. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure there's something out there. And I would also probably use, when searching for something like that, the word propagation in there, because propagation, there are, you know, actually my computer is actually sitting on top of a plant propagation book, but it's more of a, it's a very, I don't know if it, I would recommend that particular book, but something related to plant propagation would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm sure there's quite a few of them out there. And I'm, you know, our one of our guests from the UW Extension, Lisa Johnson, mentions a book a number of times. I'll be darned if I can remember the name of it, but I know that there are some, there's some good ones out there. So good luck with that, Mark. But if all else fails, maybe you can make an app for that. So let's go back to the phones. We've got Ellen in Cedarburg. Hi, Ellen. What can we help you with?
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter and I moved quite tall, I think maybe 6 feet tall, about 3-inch diameter, we believe it's a ficus, with the small leech kind, to her studio, which gets a lot of southern light, but the leaves are dropping like crazy anyway, which we kind of expected, but we're just hoping we can keep it alive. What should we do?
Sure. It sounds like you have a ficus benjamina, also called the weeping fig. Very common plant, or very common, I should say, kind of tree that's used in indoors. And it loses leaves very easily. It seems like when the wind changes or somebody sneezes, that plant will start to lose leaves. But a few things that you can do. First is expect leaf loss with Ficus benjamina. It's going to be very hard to ever have that plant and not have leaves fall off. And it's in the process, it typically does that when it's acclimating. It's either acclimating or there's something it doesn't like. So if it gets too wet or too dry, that's a quick, you know, surefire way to get it to lose its leaves. In this case, you've moved it to a new environment. So it's going to have different light exposure. And even if it's better conditions, it still kind of has to acclimate to that. When it was moved, you know, all of that is all part of the acclimation process. But the best thing I think you can do for it is continue to give it really good light, and then monitor the moisture and keep it watered and fertilized as needed. And then over time, you will get new growth and the leaf loss will get a lot less. And try to reduce any type of shock or anything, and it'll be pretty good. But you'll still have some leaf loss with Ficus benjamina.
That's just part of their nature. Speaking of fertilizer, you know, it's kind of like a debate. Do you fertilize your indoor plants during the winter or do you not? What's your thoughts on that, Matt?
Sure. The plants that I was just watering earlier, I was actually using a very small amount of fertilizer. So it's a very, very low rate. To give people an idea, when you're fertilizing plants outside, or if you're a grower, you're fertilizing at 10 times the rate. So when you're fertilizing tomatoes or roses outside, it's literally 10 times the rate of what you would be fertilizing plants indoors. So it's a very low rate. To be honest, it probably doesn't make a big difference if you stop fertilizing in the wintertime or continue to fertilize. If you're concerned that, boy, I fertilize a lot, then sometimes what we recommend people do is, yeah, wintertime is typically a good time to take a break from watering or from fertilizing the plants because they're probably not growing as much. And the soil does appreciate, you know, just straight water once in a while. But I don't think you'll see a profound effect either way.
Okay. Let's go to Lisa in Black Earth. Hi, Lisa. What question do you have?
Thanks. My question is, I had my orchids outside in the shade for the summer, and I brought them in a bus tub. And now I'm seeing some of the leaves get thin and rather flappy or floppy. And I'm not sure if they have bugs or not, but can you tell me what to do about that?
Yeah, so if the leaves are floppy, just so I understand, did they just start doing this when you brought them inside?
Actually, I noticed a little bit of some kind of a light webbing on one of them, and I used an insecticide on that one, and some of them are just fine, and I know not to overwater them, and they're still in all their pots, so I just don't know if I'm getting an infestation and I need to just chuck them all or what, but there's a dozen of them.
Okay, yeah, I mean, then I think it's worth trying to keep them if you can. If you do see webbing on there, then that's a clear indication that you probably have spider mites on there. And spider mites are hard to see. A lot of times, you know, my eyesight, close vision gets worse over time. It's hard for me to see them, but the webbing and the damage you could typically see. And insecticidal soap is a really good option to use for that. But the also another important thing is to do it multiple times. So I think one of the mistakes I've made it too is I have mites and I treat them once and then that's it. Mites can reproduce pretty quickly, and they reproduce faster when the plants are in a window. So they like bright, warm to hot areas and dry air and reproduce quickly. So if you have that, do an application. You know, every product is different, but a lot of times it's within a week or 2 weeks to do a second application and probably a third application. And aside from that, just regular cultural care and really good light, that should get those orchids through the wintertime.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Good luck with those orchids. We've got an email from Mark in New Glarus, apparently every Mark in town. He's been trying to reuse geraniums for the past few years by bringing them into the basement. He's trimming them, he's watering once a month, but they still don't grow the next year. Any suggestions?
Yeah. You know what I would do instead is I would, if I wanted them the following year, I would kind of head them back and keep them. If you have a sunny area, I would put them in that area and try to keep them alive as best as possible. You're not expecting a lot of growth, but you're just getting them through the winter. And they don't need to be big. And then come spring, I would let them start grow out. And if they're too floppy, then what I would do is head back the stems. And outside, you will get new growth. You really can't expect much growth inside, but once those are outside, you'll get a lot of new growth in the late spring and summer.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that overwinter, and like you said, they're usually inside in the light, and they just keep caring for them best they can. So, okay, Mark. Catherine emailed us. She has a phyllia, P-I-L-E-A, that is dropping its leaves, and it's tall and skinny. Any suggestions for better care?
Okay. I'm guessing it's a pilea, I'm assuming. So the best way to the plant is tall and skinny. Typically what that means is it's not getting enough light. And when we talk about light for plants, you know, red light more than anything encourages growth, but blue light actually encourages the plants to not get stretchy. And so to me, it's an indication that there's not enough blue light, and you know, natural light has plenty of blue light in it. But long story short, if you get that plant into a higher light area, then it will stop that stretching. You may be able also to prune it. But the reason why plants do that, why they stretch in the first place, is that you also see this in a forest. They're trying to get to more light. And so the best way to do that is for the plant to just grow, you know, up and out through competition to get to that light. And then once it gets to it, it starts to grow healthy again. So try to get some more natural light if you can. Okay. And if that's not an option, you might prune it too.
All right. I'm going to go to a little break. And Matt, you're breaking up a little bit. So we're going to get a hold of you on the phone. But we will be back in just a bit. So everybody, stay with us. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Our guest today is Matt Kostelnik. He is the technical manager at Ambius. Are you looking for suggestions for plants for your home? Or maybe you have one that's not looking so great? We'd love you to join us. The number, 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hopefully, we've got you by phone now, Matt, so hopefully things will sound really good. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Excellent. Yeah. That happens occasionally. We love the internet, but you know. So let's go back to the phones. We got Rachel in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So I have a question about my houseplant begonia. I think it's an angel wing. I'm kind of doing some research now. It's really tall. It's got woody stems that kind of look like bamboo. I've had it for over 2 years, and it's potentially a lot older than that. So the issue is it was an outside plant like all of my other house plants, and I brought them in at the end of summertime. So now I'm seeing like some webbing. I did hear Matt mention spider mites earlier, and also along with that, I know that for a fact there is earthworms in the pot. I don't know how or when they got in there. And I imagine it's good for the soil, but I don't know how earthworms inside of houseplants actually get there, or like what if it's good to have them in that confined space. And like I said, I've had it for over 2 years, and I just had a first blossoming happen, and it lasted probably about a month or two. So I'm wondering if maybe it is actually healthier than I think. It's also for the past maybe 4 or 5 months, it has periodically yellowing of the leaves, and they get pretty like crispy. I don't know if that's like natural, you know, normal plant behavior. I should mention too that I live in an apartment, and I've kind of moved the plant around the past few months, just trying to get a sweet spot for it. And it's currently in a north-facing window. It was pretty close to the window, and then I just recently moved it back. So it's probably sitting about 10 feet away from the north facing window, and it is under a conventional yellow light bulb. So I was happy to hear that light bulbs actually do some help to our house plants. So yeah, any sort of information regarding any of those topics would be very helpful.
Okay. Thanks, Rachel. Matt, a lot to tackle there.
Sure. Yeah. I hope I remember everything. But I would say, first off, if you do have webbing, then yes, you probably do have spider mites. And again, a very common problem indoors and also this time of the year, because the air is very dry and they actually prefer dry air. And that's different than most pests. Most pests do seem to like, you know, higher humidity, but spider mites, they love the dry air, and that gives them a big advantage. And so I would say try to knock those down, because the spider mites, what they do is they steal chlorophyll from the plant, and that's what helps the plant make its own food. So it's just stealing from the plant, essentially. And then also, I would say try to get it as much light as you possibly can. And then if you can, in the warmer months of the year, I would take these begonias back outside, because I typically associate begonias with being outdoors. They can be brought indoors, but I would get them back outside. And you might also consider, if they're getting too tall, of possibly heading some of them back. And by heading, that's a type of pruning where you're cutting into the stem and you're cutting back to a node on the plant and trying to leave some leaves underneath where you made that cut to promote some new growth. It was also what I was referring to with those geraniums of heading back. And then you can keep that plant more stout and compact so it doesn't get too big. And then as far as the earthworms, that's an interesting question. I've never really heard of, I guess I have seen worms inside used for compost. Worms are always good for the soil. How they got there, the eggs of worms are very small. So if any outdoor soil or compost or anything like that was brought inside or used in that, that's, you know, I'm assuming that's how it got there. But worms are fantastic for soil, you know, may not be the most sanitary thing to have inside. Although I do know of people using certain types of worms to compost things like shredded newspaper and so forth to create really good soil out of it. So as far as the soil and the plants go, the earthworms are great.
Okay, I think you covered them all, Matt. Thanks, Rachel. Good luck with that. So begonias outside, like low light, but when we bring them inside, we should try to give them a lot brighter space. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because outside, you know, what we consider, you know, shade outside is actually much more light than we think it is. If you were to ever use something like a light meter to measure how bright light is outdoors, even in a shady area, it's typically much brighter than most locations indoors, except maybe, you know, where you're getting direct sunlight. But yeah, I would err on more light for those. Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks again, Rachel. Let's go to Cindy in Antioch, Illinois. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. My question is about using calcium on top of houseplants. I've read that you can dry eggshells and then pulverize them and sprinkle some of that on top of houseplants and then water through. Is that really beneficial? I know I do that with tomatoes. When I plant my tomato plants in the ground, I put eggshells in the hole of the planter to keep the tomatoes from getting blossom end rot, and it works.
Yeah, and I don't know if it would make a big difference with houseplants. As you mentioned, tomatoes do need a large amount of calcium, and if they don't, then the tomatoes are quick to show that with the blossom end rot. With indoor plants, they too need calcium as well. You could try it, but also, you know, regular fertilizers also have calcium in them. As an example, the houseplant fertilizer that I use, just a regular foliage plant fertilizer, after nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, I believe the next biggest element in there is calcium. So it is part of regular fertilizer as well. But I don't think you have anything to lose by giving it a try. So, yeah, I would say try it.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Cindy. And Jackie emailed us. She would like to know how often you should repot indoor plants and when is the best time of year to do it. If the plants are root-bound, can some of the roots be trimmed off and put into the same pot with new soil?
Okay, yeah, those are really great questions. So the time of the year with indoor plants doesn't make a big difference. I mean, I'd say whenever it needs to be repotted. If you're anticipating, you know, the plants growing faster, for example, in spring or summer, then it would be ideal to do it right before that time if you can, but otherwise any time of the year. As far as trimming the roots, there's very few plants that don't enjoy that. The most plants love to have their roots pruned. What that does is if you take a root-bound plant out of its pot and you, at the very least, massage it or score it with a knife or pruners, then little new feeder roots will start to develop from there. So that's always good, whether you're putting that plant back in its original grow pot or if you're putting into a larger grow pot. And if you are putting in a larger grow pot, I would suggest, you know, maybe one to two, you know, sizes. I wouldn't go too far, you know, much bigger on that next plant. But if you're wondering when is the best time to do it, for most plants, it's when if you were to pull the plant out, if you start to see a lot of circling roots, that's a really good indication. You know, sometimes you'll see circling roots on the top of the soil. Sometimes if you can't pull the plant out of its container, you know, that's a good indication that it's root bound. You may actually have to cut the container off. But I would also add that there are some plants out there that really don't like to be, that actually prefer to be root bound. Palms, for example, generally we don't replant those. We typically leave them. But most other plants, when you see more roots than soil, that's an indication it should be repotted.
Okay. And if we're going to be repotting it, is that a good time to maybe take out some of that soil that's already there and add new, or should we just leave it?
I would say if you have soil on the surface that is salty or, you know, just doesn't feel like it's good, healthy soil, that's a great time to maybe get rid of some of that. And add some new soil. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I typically leave, you know, the rest of the soil there. I don't typically remove any of it. And you do want to kind of massage the roots and loosen them up a little bit, but you don't want to go too hard on them. You don't want to pulverize them. If you disturb roots too much to the point where, you know, you've kind of like untangled them, that's not good. The roots will not like that.
Mm-hmm. And as far as choosing soil, are we pretty safe with bag soil from the store? Is that what we should be using?
Yes. Use houseplant soil. Anything that's affiliated with being used outside, you would not want to use. Anything that's a houseplant soil that's typically sold like inside a garden center, like this time of the year, that's probably all you're going to find is houseplant soil. So something that is for use indoors. Anything containing topsoil from outside, I would not recommend that, or any type of compost that would be used outside, because then you could have a lot of pest issues mm-hmm. with those types of mixes.
Okay. Mary in New London emailed us. She has a one-year-old Christmas cactus that is blooming beautifully right now. What should she do after the blooming is done, about like light or water? And she understands that it will need a darkish dormant period in fall, but what does that look like, and when should that dormant period start?
I would say the best advice I can give on that is just to mimic nature. So as the days are getting shorter here, that's kind of the same thing with poinsettias and other plants that like shorter days. So I wouldn't add any additional supplemental light as we go into fall, as the days get really short, to allow it to actually bloom. But when it is actually, and then, you know, let it bloom. When it's done blooming, you know, you can remove the old blooms. If you want to prune it, you can certainly prune it and then let it go back into a vegetative state. And that's what will happen when the days are longer. So as we go into spring and summer, we have long days. That allows the plant to start growing more, not producing blooms, making more food for the plant. And then as that plant does go into a period when the days get shorter again, it will then prepare to bloom again. So make sure as the days are getting shorter here, kind of mimic that as best you can with the plant inside your house so that it will actually bloom next fall.
And Christmas cactus don't need a whole lot of attention. So sometimes people overwater or worry about them too much. Isn't that true?
Yeah. It is a succulent type of plant. Do not overwater them. As you mentioned, Jill, they are a lower maintenance plant. So probably the worst thing you could do to them is overwater them.
Okay. This is an interesting email from Katie. The squirrels hid acorns in her outdoor for summer potted, key lime tree, and they're starting to sprout. If they can hang in over the winter, will they be too spoiled by the winter indoors to plant outdoors in the spring? Those helpful squirrels.
Yeah. It's very interesting. My guess is that they probably will, but there's only one way to find out, yep. You know, is to actually try. And one thing I will say that, you know, when plants do go outside, if too harsh of a shock is, you know, that can it be way too much for them. But if you just gradually introduce them to the outdoors, you know, maybe it's an hour, you know, then 2 hours, then maybe 3 hours, sometimes putting in the shade, something to take that off the edge. They may actually be able to acclimate to that and handle it, as opposed to just, you know, one day going in, you know, 72 degrees and then, you know, going into harsh conditions outside all at once, no break. That's probably too much for them.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Do you think it would be a good idea for her to take those out of that key lime tree pot while they're still young and their roots aren't too big?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the sooner you do that, the better. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'd love to hear how that works out. So let us know, Katie. We've got Terry in Milwaukee on the line. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning. Each spring in April, I buy some maple trees, potted maple trees, about 1.5 to 2 inches in diameter at the base, in about a 16-inch diameter pot, and rather than just take the tree with the earth and the roots out of the plastic container, what I've been doing is I've been taking a utility knife and cutting down about 1.5 inches in to the roots at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock, and then putting an X score across the bottom to open up those roots so I don't get, you know, root lock, or however you term that. Am I doing a good thing for that tree when I'm planting it?
By keeping it in its grow pot?
No. I don't keep it in the grow pot. The grow pot's plastic.
Oh, you're talking about the
cutting the roots.
Cutting the roots. Oh, yes. As far as cutting the roots, yes, I think that's a good thing to do. Absolutely, because by doing that, then you're going to help stimulate new feeder roots. As long as you don't rough up the roots too much, then that's always a good thing, because as you score those roots, what it does is it releases a hormone, and that encourages new little roots. And this is similar to like root stimulants when you use a rooting hormone or root tone, as they call it. That too is going to help encourage little feeder roots. And the feeder roots are really important. They're the smallest roots. Those are the ones that are actually pulling the water and nutrients out of the soil. So, yes, that's definitely a good thing, especially when you're transplanting, putting that tree into the ground. Yes.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years, and it seems to work out really well. So good for you, Terry. Now, we were talking earlier about, you know, well, inside plants, obviously, but as far as temperature goes, now we kind of think, oh, well, you know, we've got the thermostat set at 70 degrees, so that should be good for our plants. Do we have to be concerned about the cold and hot in the inside during the winter?
It depends on how cold or hot it gets. I would say, as a rule, if there's a big change in temperature really fast, for example, if the plants are usually, you know, sitting in 72 degrees, and then let's say you were to go on vacation and turn the heat completely off and it was unusually cold, the plants will not like that. They will probably survive that, but I would expect to see, you know, their water use go down and, you know, probably yellow leaves and maybe some drooping and them not being particularly happy about that. But, you know, with most houseplants, they are acclimating to the indoors. Most houseplants are tropical by nature. So they actually prefer, you know, temperatures, you know, in the upper 70s and 80s and high humidity. But inside buildings, they do acclimate to these drier less than desirable conditions. And that's also why they slow down a lot, why you get yellow leaves, why you get tipping and things like that. So the short answer is I wouldn't worry about it too much. I would, you know, run the temperature as it needs to be to accommodate people and expect that the plants will acclimate to it. And if you do get, you know, some, you know, maybe frowny faces from your plants when you return from vacation, well, you know, you saved a lot of energy and money by not turning the heat up, you know, just to accommodate the plants. So I would say just do, you know, what you normally do and leave it at that.
And be aware of maybe drafty windows or those air vents or heating vents.
Yes. Right. Drafty windows are a problem. If it is a window that does get unusually cold, I would pull it back from that location. I would try to keep it away from drafty areas as well, because the plants don't like that. It also causes it to lose water faster than it can take it in. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely avoid those type of areas. Absolutely.
We got an email from Bill in Sheboygan. This isn't really an inside plant, but can he trim a holly plant bush back to create new growth?
Yes, you can. You can cut them back. Almost any plant you can cut back to a node, you will promote new growth. Now, if you are trying to get new growth, I would not really prune much of anything this time of the year in terms of trying to get new growth. Well, I guess it's kind of too late at this point. I'm actually in Illinois, and I still have rose bushes out front, and if I were to prune them now, it might actually try to stimulate some new growth that would then be damaged. But typically late winter, early spring is the best time to prune, because shortly after that, it will allow for new growth to happen. I wouldn't prune them when they're actively growing. So like right before they go into active growth is a good time to prune.
It's kind of hard to judge this year with our warmer temperatures and lack of really cold nights. Should we wait, like if there's going to be maybe 6 or 7 days of cold temperatures, is that a good point to say, oh, these must be dormant at this point? Is that a safe bet?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, colder weather will be coming. I did see it in the forecast. But when plants are dormant, my advice to people is just let them be. Don't really bug them too much. You know, they don't like, they need protection. But aside from that, there's really not a whole lot to do in terms of maintenance when mm-hmm. plants are dormant.
Okay. And what about indoor plants as far as trimming and pruning? If we see, like, you know, yellowing leaves or things like that, what's the best way to do that? Should we just cut that leaf back? Should we trim the edge of the leaf if it's maybe brown and crispy on that end? What's the best practice there?
Yeah, that's a great question. It depends. I look at a number of factors when I do that. It's not always cut and dry. For example, if I have a plant and it has lots of leaves on it, like I just had some peace lilies I was taking care of, and they're loaded with leaves. So I don't really think twice about removing a leaf on a plant like that, because it's got tons of leaves on the plant. And when you have leaves that are getting in the way and preventing other growth, those to me are also ones that's like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and remove those, because, you know, the plants are going to appreciate it. But when you have a plant that doesn't have many leaves on it, that's when I might lean more towards actually trimming the leaf potentially, because the plants are going to need leaves to survive. And that's what's making the food on those plants. Most of that photosynthesis takes place mostly in those leaves. And so I would just use your best judgment on those. And, you know, a lot of times when you do trim the leaf, it will start to die back from that point. And that's okay, you know, but try to, you know, trim them as best you can. And if you're not sure, you know, to trim or remove the leaf, you're probably better off just removing the leaf and see what happens after that.
And any specific tools that we should use, or is a scissors okay to use for cutting that off?
Scissors are fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sharp scissors, mm-hmm. you know, the sharper, the better. And if you're removing leaves, most leaves I typically remove by hand. Sometimes on plants like a bird of paradise, or I even have dwarf bananas or palms for that matter, I cut those off, because if you pull those off, if you rip them off, you'll expose delicate tissue, and those don't like that. So
sure.
When in doubt, just go ahead and trim it off with either pruners or scissors.
Okay. And before we have to let you go, just briefly tell us a little bit about Ambien and what goes on there.
Yeah, Ambius is a national company that installs and maintains interior plants. So if you see plants in office buildings or hotels, restaurants, airports, any public space indoors, that is what Ambius does, is that we put them in and then we maintain them.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in on a regular cycle and we water them and we prune them and do all the things necessary, clean them to keep them looking as beautiful as possible. And the other large business that we do, we're actually taking it down right now, is holiday installations.
Oh.
So over the holidays, large ornamental trees and wreaths and garlands and things like that. So in a nutshell, that's what Ambius does.
Yeah, you must be really busy before the holidays and really busy after with all that change out, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a busy time of the year. Yeah.
Have you noticed any trends in what you've been doing for office spaces?
I would say that people are more into natural things. So whether it be decorative containers or just looks in general, I would say there's a trend away from super flashy colors and more colors that are more natural and soft and kind of trying to bring the outdoors inside.
Okay.
As much as possible.
Well, that makes sense. Well, I know you got a meeting, Matt, so thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Matt Kostelnik. He is the technical manager at Ambius. And if you want to hear this show or any of our others, again, go to WPR.org/Larry. Check out our archives list. Stay with us because there's always more to come on the Ideas Network.